Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight we have another awesome show. My God, he is indeed awesome. Welcome to the Rev Up with Reverend Alethea Blog Talk Radio Show with your host, Reverend Alethea Smith-Withers, the pastor of the Pavilion of God in Washington, D.C. Tonight we're going to have another awesome, inspirational show. My guest is Lori Weinstein, the executive director of the Jewish Women International. She's a lady whom, when you meet, you quickly become her admirer and avowed supporter. She has a lot to share, and this will be an opportunity for important discussion on domestic violence, and this is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. If you're a first-time listener, a special welcome to you. I invite you to tune in on a regular basis. Also, you can always listen on demand and easily turn your work time, computer time, or leisure time into an opportunity to rev up, accelerate, and energize your life. The Tuesday night show, Rev Up Show, is a keeping it real show about life. I minister to the people of God through all phases of their experience, even up to the higher life of meaning. This show is a safe place to talk about everything from pop culture to politics. So I invite you to follow this show so that you don't miss any special broadcast. So if you're listening and you're on the Blog Talk Radio site right now, click follow so that you can be updated regarding any special broadcast. If you're in the Washington metropolitan area, I invite you to worship with the Pavilion of God on Sundays at 6401 Chilham Place Northwest, 6401 Chilham Place Northwest, Washington, D.C., at 12:30 p.m. We're a small church with a big worship, and I invite you to come out and join us. Our Bible study is on Thursday evening at 6:30 p.m. We are studying how to hear the voice of God in daily life, and that's 6:30 p.m. on Thursday evenings. You can also, on Wednesdays, call in on our prayer line and pray with us, and we'll be happy to share your prayer, share your concerns. Simply dial 605-475-4333, 605-475-4333. Access code is 213-781, 213-781. Remember, the Pavilion of God is a safe place and sacred place. And at the Pavilion, you can truly come as you are. That's how we meet you. As you are. Tweet me at Rev Alethea. Follow me on Instagram at Rev Alethea or email Rev Alethea, L-E-T-H-E-A, at gmail.com. Rev, R-E-V, A-L-E-T-H-E-A, at gmail.com. Like the Pavilion of God on Facebook. Check out our Facebook page, and that's how you keep up with all information about the Pavilion of God, and you receive inspirational messages throughout the day. So share the Pavilion of God Facebook page with your friends. As I said, this is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Did you know that 1 in 4 women have experienced domestic violence? This is also Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Remember to talk to your doctor about your mammogram. Most physicians are saying you're to begin having mammogram at age 40 unless you have a family history that would require having mammograms at an earlier point in your life, and do your monthly self-breast examinations. Eat healthy, exercise. I'm a breast cancer overcomer, and I encourage all of us to be aware of the things we can do to prevent breast cancer and to certainly be aware. Early detection with breast cancer means that you have a great opportunity of saving your life. Breast Cancer Awareness Month, be aware and love your body. Take care of your body. Before we get to tonight, truly begin at what is the beginning for me, to embrace the Alpha and Omega sacred connection to the divine. And so I invite you to open your heart, open your mind as I pray. Immortal, invisible, God only wise, we thank you for the change of seasons, for the crisp autumn air, for the leaves that are changing from green to shades of red, yellow, purple, and brown. We thank you for the visible reminders of your creative presence, O God, and your power that is around us in all aspects of life. O God, we pray that you open our eyes so that we might see the changes and even be more aware of the seasons of our lives. There is a time for every and a season for every activity under the heavens. There is a time, O God, for everything, and a season for every activity under the heavens. Immortal, invisible, God only wise, we pray tonight that you prepare our hearts for seasons of growth and seasons of empowerment, seasons of healing and wholeness, rising up and supporting others, a season for remembering those who lost their battles and recommitting ourselves to be survivors, victors, overcomers, and more than conquerors. Lord Jesus, we pray this prayer in humility, knowing who we are, knowing whose we are. Amen, amen, and amen. Beloved, if you're just joining us, welcome. I'm Rev. Alethea, host of the Rev Up with Reverend Alethea blog talk radio show. And as with every show, we're going to do everything to rev up, accelerate, and energize your thinking this evening. I invite you to join the dialogue by dialing 347-945-7723, 347-945-7723, and you'll have an opportunity to talk with our guests or write on our blog or email me with your comments or questions, and I'll be happy to share that with our guests tonight. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and we are fortunate tonight to break the silence about domestic violence in a conversation with Lori Weinstein. Lori is the CEO and Executive Director of Jewish Women International, an organization committed to protecting the rights of all women and girls to live in safe homes and thrive in healthy relationships. JWI leads the Jewish community's efforts to reauthorize the Violence Against Women Act, as well as the International Violence Against Women Act in Congress. In addition, JWI created and is the convener of the Interfaith Coalition to End Domestic Violence, Domestic Abuse, the Interfaith Coalition to End Domestic Abuse. This is a coalition of more than two dozen national faith organizations, including leaders from Christian, Jewish, Muslim, Mormon, Pentecostal, and Baha'i faith, dedicated to the promotion of public policy and federal legislation to end domestic violence. Lori, welcome to the Rev Up with Reverend Alethea Blog Talk Radio Show.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to join you and so happy to be here tonight.
Oh, it's great to have you. And who would know that you're going to be on the show talking about such a huge, huge topic as domestic violence. And this is a perfect time to talk about it. I'm sure you've been talking about the best domestic violence in a big way all of this month.
Right.
And I want to ask you, the topic is so huge, Lori. I'm often at my wit's end trying to determine how best to enter this discussion. Where do you usually start with this topic?
Well, I think the topic, as you said, is such a—it's such a large topic, and it's such a—it has so many tentacles. And you know, we look at the issue of domestic abuse and sexual assault as really being part of a holistic framework around violence against women. And we know that women who are victims of violence, whether it's domestic abuse, sexual assault, in the range in between, we know that these are women who are at risk. And as you so beautifully stated at the beginning of your introduction, it's important to have a real sense, a framework for understanding that this is a very common occurrence, all too common in this country. One out of four women will be a victim of domestic abuse or sexual assault in their lifetime. And so we have a lot of work to do, and how we go about introducing the topic really depends on who we're talking to. What's that?
I said, yeah, I would imagine that would make a great
right.
deal of difference,
right.
depending on your audiences.
You know, when I started doing this work, I was I had recently finished graduate school and come to Washington to work directly in the field as a domestic violence advocate in a shelter located in Washington, D.C. And I remember trying to talk about the issue of domestic abuse and the way that it manifested itself in families and relationships. And I remember there were very, very few people who were willing to listen. They didn't understand how financial abuse or emotional or spiritual abuse and degradation, how those were actually domestic violence and part of the domestic violence spectrum. They felt that the conversations around actual violence were private, were things that belonged within families or within the within safe institutions, but there was a very little willingness to really open the dialogue and have the conversation. And I marvel at how that has changed and truly feel that here we are in 2014 and we're approaching a tipping point, really. The awareness and acknowledgement of how large a problem we have and that we have in this country, the work that's being done by so many people in so many communities around the United States, and we look today and we know that you can no longer abuse your partner and feel that somehow you're above the law. And
isn't
certainly
that amazing?
The recent situation, it's amazing, and it's a big change. Certainly the issues of violence, domestic abuse, and how it impacts the sports right now, and particularly in football,
mm-hmm.
It's created just a growing awareness in this country.
Yeah, and well, an awareness and debate, issues of confusion, and still the issue of what is domestic violence. And you've covered a vast spectrum of domestic violence, because I think part of the challenge, well, there's so many aspects of the challenge. As you said, number one, people don't want to talk about it. They're doing much better. We're all doing much better at talking about domestic violence. I think at one point, when you said domestic violence advocate, I can remember when there really wasn't a term for that, when we didn't
right.
know what to call that. There wasn't
right.
you know, who wanted to be a domestic violence advocate? Who knew what that was?
Right.
Who knew what that there was a spectrum for those kinds of things? We didn't name it, and we couldn't address it. There was tremendous shame and confusion about domestic violence.
Right.
Certainly, victims continue to be blamed for domestic violence, and certainly those around the victim will often blame the victim, and the victim himself or herself will blame
him. So there's
the
an
woman
enormous,
typically is blamed.
There's an enormous amount of self-blame and personal sense of shame, and I think the idea of shame is something that is so important in really understanding the psychological deterioration of people who are living in abusive and violent relationships. And that makes it very difficult for them to take the courageous steps that are needed to leave. And that becomes, again, part of a very challenging dynamic for so many women. But I wanted to reflect back to a comment that you made just a minute ago about the fact that there are so few, you know, that 20, 30 years ago, nobody was talking about this. There wasn't a field. It wasn't a profession. In fact, there was an advocacy world, and that was the advocacy world trying to make change. The advocacy world was, in fact, very disconnected from the faith community. And one of the things that we feel so strengthened and empowered by is the fact that the faith community has really joined hands with the advocacy world in articulating a vision that is grounded in the individual faith models, but really aspires to see families whole and healthy, where everyone is living free of coercion and of violence, of abuse, of manipulation. And the work of our Interfaith Coalition, hand in hand with the work of organizations like the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence, the National Network to End Domestic Violence, and organizations like JWI that really work on both sides, both faith and secular. But this collaborative work was really instrumental in reauthorizing the Violence Against Women Act, which has done more to end or reduce the number of cases of domestic violence in this country and to create comprehensive resources for women and families, has done more than anything else. And yet it was really in jeopardy just a year and a half ago of reauthorization because of some of the partisan politics in Washington. So fortunately, the faith community was a beautiful and loud voice in articulating for the reauthorization and advocating for the reauthorization.
Okay, well, I want to talk about the legislation, but I want to go back to, you've covered so much so clearly and helpfully for the audience that's listening, and I've gotten a couple of questions that came in just now, two, in fact, that said they want to know more about the Interfaith Coalition to End Domestic Violence. I mean, the idea, I'm going to say, from what I'm seeing, very few people, few of the listeners have even heard of the Interfaith Coalition to End Domestic Violence. How old is this organization or this coalition?
Thank you for asking, because it's something that means a lot to me, and so I'm very happy to talk about it. The coalition itself is about 6 years old, and JWI began as the convener of the coalition. We began with a belief that together we were stronger and that we could add so much to the work and the voices of advocates in the field. So we felt this was a really wonderful way to convene the tapestry of faith organizations around an issue that we all agreed on, that we could all work to see the end of violence against women and girls. Now, we might not agree on a lot of other things, and sometimes there are differences of opinion, but we all agree on this, so much so that we have expanded the definition of the group. We work on federal policies, federal and public policies, to end violence and sexual assault against women and girls. And so we have today, I think, more than 30 national faith organizations that are part of the Interfaith Coalition. And if anybody would like more information about the Interfaith Coalition...
That's what I wanted to ask. So what
they should feel free to contact me at JWI, and that's Lori, L-O-R-I, Weinstein, W-E-I-N-S-T-E-I-N, at JWI.org. And if you didn't have time to jot that down, I encourage you just to go to JWI.org, and you'll see some contact information where you can just click on and ask any questions, say that you're interested in the Interfaith Coalition and our work, and somebody will get back with you shortly.
And I want to remind the listeners, the website address is on the blog, on Blog Talk Radio, Rev Up with Reverend Alethea, Blog Talk Radio. You can simply click on that, but that's www.jwi.org. And you can get all kinds of wonderful information, including who some of the members of the Interfaith Coalition are. And they are diverse: Islamic Social Services Association, Faith Trust Institute. There are many different religious action centers for Reform Judaism, and the National Catholic of Catholic Women, National Council of Catholic Women. There's a very diverse group of members across a very broad spectrum of faith understanding. And so if someone is from an individual church, and that's how we often respond, not just our larger memberships, from an individual church wants to be involved, is there a way that they can be involved in
I think that, absolutely, and there are ways to be involved and to stay kind of engaged in what's going on, but also to participate in our lobby days specifically. So there are at least one or two days each year where we are on Capitol Hill as the Interfaith Coalition, and at that time there are a number of individual churches and faith communities that participate as well. So we welcome the broadest tapestry because we know that it empowers the whole group.
Yes, absolutely. Now, we're going to have a conversation tomorrow at 1 o'clock on... What are you doing tomorrow?
Tomorrow, well, this is as you mentioned at the beginning, and as we've been talking, this is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. JWI is honing in on this Domestic Violence Awareness Month on the intersection of gun violence and violence against women, and this is something that is very, very important. And tomorrow we are hosting a Google chat that is the format is going to be a very engaged conversation with a number of leaders, including Senator Richard Blumenthal, who is one of the true advocates for addressing the issue of gun violence and its impact on women. And so he will be one of a number of speakers. This Google chat you can sign up for by going to jwi.org/enough. Actually, it's slash enough. And the basis of the conversation is going to be the latest book by former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords and her
husband,
Mark Kelly. And her book is titled Enough, and I encourage everyone to read it as a way of really understanding the traumatic impact that gun violence is having in our country today and the challenges that we all face in trying to enact sensible gun legislation. I think it's really important because we are talking about domestic violence tonight to just say some things that are really, when I first learned them, they were sort of mind-boggling. I couldn't figure out how they made sense. But for everyone who's listening, you should know that in over an 11-year period from 2001 to 2012, more than 6,400 women were murdered in the United States by an intimate partner who was using a gun. And to put that in perspective, that is more than the total number of U.S. troops that were killed in action during the war in Iraq and Afghanistan combined. So
let me slow that down because it's so huge. I can't even envision the number. Can you give the number again? Want us to be so powerful, so important. I got chills as you said it, Lori. I think there are times when we give statistics and numbers that the power is lost. And I don't want the power lost here because it is too significant, too important. I'm looking at the cover of the book by Gabrielle Giffords, Enough. And it is such, and that's what we need to be saying. It is enough. And before you go on with the statistics again, I want to repeat the web address, www.jwi.org/enough. And I'm not sure, is that where we sign up as well? I'm looking
yeah,
at
you
the
sign,
book cover.
You, if you sign up there, and then we make sure that the way I understand it, I'm new to Google Chat, but the way my team explains it, that you sign up and then we'll reach you right before the Google Chat begins.
Yes,
so,
and I've got lots of Google Chats. They're lots of they're a lot of fun because you're really connected to the speakers. You're
exactly.
You're very able to see them, hear them. And really have this more intimate chat with people you want to hear from and a topic that is so critical and so important. So give the statistics. How many women are you talking about that have been
We're talking about a couple of things, I mean, to keep in mind. In the United States, 5 women are murdered with a gun every day.
Wow.
Between 2001 and 2012, 6,410 women were murdered in the United States by an intimate partner who was using a gun. Now, other women were murdered by other means, but 6,410 women were murdered in the U.S. by an intimate partner using a gun. And the perspective on that is that that is more than the total number of troops that were killed in action during the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq combined. So you know, what does that really mean? Well, it means that at least in our statistic gathering between 2003 and 2012, more than half of all women who were murdered by intimate partners were killed with a gun. And that women in the United States are 11 times more likely to be murdered with a gun than women in other high-income countries. Now, that to me is just disgraceful.
Well, it's also a little, it's disgraceful, it's startling. I think for some are confusing. My lines are lit up, Lori, with people who are calling in. They're not asking questions, so I know they're listening. And I know in part, the statistics are, we wonder, how could that be in the United States? We see ourselves as advanced in so many ways, and we are advanced in so many ways.
Right.
So how is it that this is happening? Now, sometimes we can't determine the why, but we can determine how to prevent it. And we need not always have a full understanding on why we're being expressing violence in this way. But we can determine ways to change this course of violence. And that's an important thing. And I'm sure there are those who are offering reasons that we're experiencing this, and there probably are a plethora of reasons. But it is startling, it is confusing, but it is also, those are the real numbers. Those are the, that speaks for itself.
Right, right. These are numbers that are, you know, based on substantial research that's been done. And really, I think, you know, where we find ourselves in this country is there are, nobody is saying that we have to get rid of all the guns.
Yes.
We are talking about enacting sensible gun violence prevention legislation, which really entails plugging up some of the loopholes, right? So that there are some very basic things that we could do that really could change these statistics. Background checks. There are so many loopholes in the background checks right now, so that if you buy a gun at a gun show or you buy a gun online on the web, often there are no background checks. And so thousands of guns are sold without ever having had a background check on the purchaser. And we know that this is a really, this is an easy thing to enact. Nobody is trying to take guns away from lawful gun owners, from people who own guns because they like to hunt, or because they feel they're some need to protect themselves at some level. But the fact is we have too many guns in this country, and yet, interestingly, we have fewer individuals own guns today than 20 years ago. But for every person who has guns, the average number of guns they have is growing. Then you have people who have 20 or 30 guns in their home. And we have heard terrible stories. We know stories of how that impacts women, families. I mean, there are accidental shootings. But the problem is when there is a gun in the house, the presence of that gun in a domestic violence situation increases the risk of a homicide for women by 500%. So we have got to get better at standardizing state laws so that when there is a protective order against an abuser, that the gun is removed from the house, and that just is commonsensical. And it's not just, and we have to be careful about this because it can't just be between married people, but it's got to also extend to people who are in dating relationships. And to women who are victims of stalking. And those are two more areas where we've got to plug up the holes. So we are really at a terrible time in terms of gun violence generally. I mean, you know, we see a school shooting just in the last few days, on top of a wide variety of shootings that are have at their foundation illegally held guns. But we've got to address the issue of the intersection of guns and domestic violence, and it's not hard to do. We all need to get behind it, and we have to remind ourselves of the importance of being citizen advocates and activists on this issue.
Yeah, and you know, as you're talking, I'm realizing and I'm being reminded that it's a part of, we have to change our values and make these declarations that enough is enough, that we have a right to say, I will not be harmed, I will not live with the threat of harm, that when I ask for the protection of the law, that I will do everything to have this my protection lived out, so the gun should be taken out of the house when there's a protection order that should
right.
not be there. And we don't know that this is our right. We can't speak for ourselves because we haven't inculcated a value of our own safety. And that's where I think the religious community, one of the many places the religious community comes in to help these values to become clear and well articulated and embraced
mm-hmm.
by various communities. Because we hear these things, we think these things, but when we're in the stress, facing the stressors of our day-to-day living, we forget what that has to do with us individually.
Right.
And we don't have those support systems in place. It is so important to have the conversation that, Lori, I want the audience to know that I did click on the link, and it takes you immediately to that. So if you go to the link that was provided and simply click on that page, you will go right to a place where you can sign up for the chat tomorrow. Let me just give that address again, www.jwi.org /enough. Enough. And when you click on the page, you will then be able to sign up for the chat tomorrow. This will be on the Pavilion of God's Facebook page. You can always simply check at www.jwi.org, and you'll be able to find the location for that. But it is so important that we begin to have values attached so that we can really fight for the law to be changed. If we don't recognize the value for women, don't recognize the value for their individual safety, if the men in our lives don't embrace that value for the women in their lives, the value of their safety, of their wives, their daughters, their sisters, their mothers, then we're all really not able to live in the ways that are healthy and promote community.
Right.
And that's the value component here that we lost and not been able to hold on to. Gun violence is also, as you were saying, so clearly attached to what we think is an American value in terms of the right to hold a gun. And you're not saying, as you said again, that we shouldn't have a gun, but there are parameters and
right.
Values that we have to be clear about and offer no apologetics for.
No what? What was that?
No apologetics.
Right.
But we're going to always kind of get lost in this fight for our right to hold and bear arms if we don't understand a broader, more comprehensive value of safety.
Right.
And the right for women to be protected and
yes.
our homes to be safe places.
And our homes to be havens of safety. And
absolutely.
To think that for one out of four women, that's not the case. They live in fear, and their haven has often turned into, a hellish place for them and their children,
mm-hmm.
and it's made that much more lethal and more toxic with the presence of a gun. I really appreciate your talking about tomorrow's Google Hangout. I think I mentioned that, Senator Richard Blumenthal is going to be one of our guests, but I also wanted to mention that we are going to have the Director of Strategy for Americans for Responsible Solutions, which is Gabby Gifford and Mark Kelly's organization. And that organization is dedicated to working with lawmakers to really change the laws to reduce gun violence in America. And Katie Ray Jones, who's the CEO of the National Domestic Violence Hotline, is just a fantastic and a amazingly articulate woman, and she will share some incredible stories of what she hears from women who are calling the hotline every day where there is a gun present in their home. And finally, Lucy McBath is also going to be joining us. She's with Moms Demand Action. It's a group of moms around the country, a large group of moms from around the country working to change the epidemic of gun violence. So, you know, it's going to be a great group. We're going to have time for a lot of questions, and people can really hear from the experts. I can't help but think that we're also on the cusp of an election, and that one of the messages that you are, Alicia, saying so graciously, but in a very articulate way, is we all have to own our responsibility as citizens, and part of that responsibility is making sure to vote, and voting for the candidates that you know really reflect our values. The issues of gun violence are very locked up in Congress right now, and we need to get to a place where Congress recognizes how essential it is that we move forward with sensible initiatives that just plug up close the loopholes and plug up the areas where too many guns are seeping through the holes. And,
And there are always personal stories attached to this. When we look at domestic violence, for our congregation, we haven't faced an issue of domestic violence that has come into the life of the congregation. But gun violence, we have. We lost one of our very strong, powerful members of our congregation who was shot after getting off of a metro. And a young man who was a scholar and a gentleman who had just completed his work for his bachelor's degree at Catholic University with a 4.0 QM, just walked away from his home. He was shot and killed. This is another story, one of the many stories that we all need to hold as a personal or personal conviction to stem the tide of gun violence. Because if it isn't your church member or your family member or your neighbor, it will ultimately be someone that is that close to you soon. Again, we need to know this is not someone else's story. It's our story. And we need to be reminded, though, that we can do something about this and share our voices and cast our votes. When we feel powerless and we can't have the conversation you and I are having and that the listeners are engaged in on this moment with their sending in their comments, if we aren't engaged, we become victims, all of us, in one way or the other. And part of the way we're victimized is into forced silence. You know, that to me is a prison that is sometimes more dangerous than the one where there are physical bars. So we need to be thoughtful about our responsibility to speak and accept our responsibility to vote.
Right.
And isn't this perfect that we're talking about this today when so many people will have the opportunity of voting this time next week?
That's right. It is a very timely conversation, and one that, you know, we're all reminded of. There are things that exemplify to us, certain issues that exemplify to us how one vote can make a difference. One vote, one phone call, one course of action, because there are many challenges, and there are, you know, there is certainly, as every, I'm sure all your listeners know, there is a lot of misunderstanding about those of us who are just seeking to enact sensible legislative changes, not take away guns lawfully and rightfully owned, but taking away those guns that put people at risk. that put women at risk, put families at risk, put communities and schools at risk.
I have a caller, so I want to get a caller in before we kind of talk about some of the legislation, too. Good evening, caller.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening. Am I on?
You're on. Would you like to share a comment or a question?
I wanted to thank you so much for this program. And I wanted to thank Lori for her information. It was very, very enlightening. And I would like to say that I look forward to trying to participate in that Google chat at 1 o'clock tomorrow. But I also want to say a couple of things. One is that I am grateful for the information on women and domestic violence, because although a lot has changed, it has changed so incredibly in terms of how the law responds to domestic violence and how individuals in the community respond to domestic violence. In other words, it's no longer an acceptable thing. Because there was a time in my lifetime when it was a shoulder shrug. You know, that just happens. I think that as Americans, our social conscience has become more and more enlightened as decades roll by. But it's only through the efforts of people like Lori and her organization and Reverend Alicia, who allows speakers and programs and information like this to go out there, that this occurs. I would also like to interject that D.C., which is where I live, is going through a gun issue right now, because they had relatively strict gun laws as compared to, say, West Virginia. But their gun statutes were pretty much torn down, and it doesn't matter who we vote for, because we have a non-voting delegate to Congress. We have no senator because we're not a state, and we need advocates. We need people to become aware. We need information to get out there, because as citizens of the District of Columbia, we have very little say. We're struggling to put some laws and regulations in place very quickly, but I mean, they can still be overturned by Congress, because whatever laws we enact here in the district still has to go through Congress for approval. They can always be vetoed. So you know, that's an issue here in the district. It's not, of course, in Maryland and Virginia and West Virginia. They have the protection of being states, so they don't have the same type of issues. But as I said, I think that this conversation is so important. And I thank you for bringing Lori, and I thank you, Lori, for being here.
Thank you so much. And I appreciate everything that you've said. And you've reminded us that we've come a long way, and there's still so much to do.
Are there suggestions for action for those members of the District of Columbia who, as the caller was saying, are compromised because D.C. is not a state?
Yeah. I think I think once the election is over and we see what the new Congress is going to look like, I think there will be some strategies that will be advanced by the new leadership. I think the complicating issue with the district is that I believe this is a federal Supreme Court decision, and so it is a little bit more complicated. But then, having said that, yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm just laughing because I'm sure you have some strategies. Of course, I'm thinking one of the great strategies for anyone in the District of Columbia is becoming active with the Interfaith Coalition to End Domestic
Violence. That's exactly where I was going.
Okay.
That it's a place for people to be active. And also, you know, we will in a week have a new mayor. I mean, there are a lot of things that I am hopeful will enable us to make changes. But, of course, the ability of the district to truly govern itself is an ongoing and really somewhat shameful challenge that we have not seemingly been able to get there.
Right. And I will say to our listeners that Lori is a resident of the District of Columbia and has a real attachment to these concerns. No, you're actually in Maryland, but still has attachment.
No, I actually live in D.C. I am in D.C., yeah.
Yes, I was right. Okay, so there's attachment to these issues. And so I would encourage people to stay in touch with her organization and with the Interfaith Coalition to End Domestic Abuse. Couldn't you just give a quick summary so that we're clear? Explain what the International Violence Against Women Act is.
Surely. So IVAWA is an initiative that's been introduced in three Congresses, it's an initiative that has actually has no funding attached to it, but literally takes existing resources in the State Department and at USAID, and in a comprehensive and holistic way addresses the issues of global violence against women. And there are ways that it does that by insisting on training it at the highest and the lowest, the field levels of our international work through the State Department and USAID, that there is gender-sensitive training, that we understand the issues that challenge women and girls around the world, that there is an emphasis on education and how we can do more to advance opportunities and education for girls. Also the International Violence Against Women Act sets, I think it's six target countries that will participate as models for comprehensive program development, advocacy, and initiatives that are looking at international development through a gender lens. We know that when we educate a girl, we build her family, we strengthen her family.
Absolutely.
When we educate a woman, we build a community. And we're seeing the impact of that in so many countries. Certainly the National Action Plan, which was put in place by Secretary of State Clinton when she was in office, has helped us already see the impact and the change that can come when we invest in women and girls in countries at risk, developing countries.
Well, you know, Lori, I think we could continue this conversation for a very long time, but our time is running to an end this evening. And what I want to do is invite us to continue the conversation on other shows. I know that I want to thank the caller who asked a question this evening. There are many others online who are listening, and I'm sure they're going to have additional questions to bring to the table, and I'll certainly share them with you as I get emails and some written responses from our listeners. Any final words that you'd like to offer in closing?
Well, I just say I think the importance is in so many things that you've said tonight, but I just want to reiterate that we all have the opportunity to change the paradigm around violence against women and specifically around gun violence. There are places to get help. There are places to get treatment. There are always places to be safe, and there is always, I say this, the responsibility that each of us has is to be there when someone else needs our support, our advice, our advocacy, to be strong role models for teens and young adults as they navigate of the treacherous landscape of relationships and healthy relationships, and to never forget that our voices lifted up and together can really have an impact on the future legislative direction and course. And we need everybody's voice on gun violence prevention. And I hope that your listeners will sign up for our Google chat or just reach out to us for more information, because there are many ways to stay engaged on these issues. And we send out very regular emails and action alerts. So there are, if this is an issue you feel passionate about, and I hope you all do, I hope you will really join us and our work and receive the very rich resources that we send out on a very regular basis.
Well, thank you so much. We will definitely have you to come back. And if anyone wants to know anything else about JWI or Lori Weinstein, please contact me. I'll be happy to share. Lori, I'm going to ask you to receive the great gratitude that I have for you being here with us tonight. You know, audience, we are so fortunate this evening to have engaged this topic, and I am so thankful for Lori's fearless work and on behalf of women and girls, and for her courage to talk about a topic that so many people whisper about and others are devastated by. I am mindful that in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 12, we read, "But there is nothing covered up that will not be revealed, or hidden that will not be known. Accordingly, whatever you have said in the dark will be heard in the light, and what you have whispered in the inner room will be proclaimed upon the housetops." You see, Lori has reminded us tonight that each of us is the hand of the divine in the revelation of the truth of domestic violence. We are the ones to usher in the light, and we are the voices that offer the proclamations from the housetops, proclamations that our families must hear, proclamations that our community leaders, religious leaders, and legislators must hear. 2 weeks ago, Iyanla LaVonsant led a behind-closed-door discussion about domestic violence at Howard University, and this discussion was sponsored by Howard University and Verizon. That discussion reminds us that the issues of domestic violence must also be talked about within the context of culture. The bottom line is, and as was said so many times this evening, we have made great strides. We are talking about the issues of domestic violence, but the bottom line is we must end domestic violence. That's our responsibility. The onus is on all of us. What do you think about this? Your voice and your vote will make a difference. Please remember, your voice and your vote will make a difference. Beloved, next week, my guest will be Jackie Gales Webb, an award-winning producer, performer, and host of the number one Sunday afternoon gospel music program on WHUR. Until next week, remember to rev up, accelerate, and energize your thinking. Rev up, accelerate, and energize your thinking.